Corporate criminals profit while others suffer in a new era of impunity. Corporate criminals are making a lot of money and causing harm to the public. For example, the Sackler family earned billions by promoting OxyContin as a safe painkiller, despite it being highly addictive. This led to over 230,000 Americans dying from prescription drug overdoses between 1999 and 2018. Similarly, Pacific Gas and Electric, PGAND, neglected to maintain their power lines while paying out billions to shareholders. This resulted in the 2018 Camp Fire in California, which destroyed homes and killed 85 people. There are other notable cases of theft. Hedge fund manager Leon Cooperman made $4 million in illegal profits using insider information in 2010. Blood testing company Theranos used fake financial reports to reach a $9 billion market value before collapsing. WeWork's Adam Neumann received a $1.7 billion payout while many of his employees lost their jobs. Corporate wrongdoing harms real people. PGAND, a company that provides energy, went bankrupt and set aside $13.5 billion to help victims of the Camp Fire. Another company, General Motors, GM, was involved in a tragic incident. In 2007, Candace Anderson, who was 21 at the time, pleaded guilty to causing the death of her boyfriend in a car crash. The crash happened because of a faulty ignition switch in her GM Saturn Ion, which GM knew about but didn't disclose until years later. Anderson was cleared of wrongdoing, and GM paid $600 million to a fund for victims. After the 2008 financial crisis, many Americans lost their homes due to mortgage issues. While the bankers responsible for the crisis didn't face consequences, the largest U.S. banks received trillions of dollars in bailouts, and their executives got bonuses. In contrast, Iceland sentenced around 36 bankers to prison for their role in the crisis. White-collar crime pays well. Angelo Mozzillo, the former head of Countrywide Financial, made $140 million by selling his company's stock in 2008. He claimed that Countrywide's mortgages were good quality, but he knew they were risky. In 2010, he settled with the Securities and Exchange Commission, agreeing to pay $67 million. His contract meant his employer paid $45 million of the settlement. Mozzillo had been paid $500 million in the previous decade. The Justice Department did not pursue criminal charges against him. Sometimes, prosecutors, scholars, and the media make economic offenses unclear. Prosecutors often talk about convicting nonviolent economic offenders. Law enforcement reporting treats small economic crimes like big schemes. The federal government should focus on the most costly economic crimes, especially those involving powerful business people. High-profile offenders now often escape punishment. After the savings and loan scandals in the 1980s, over 1,000 bankers were convicted by federal prosecutors. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, a wave of corporate crime led to high-profile executives being sent to prison. Federal prosecutors targeted many CEOs, CFOs, and COOs for their actions. For example, after Enron collapsed, four executives were prosecuted for fraud. Ken Lay, the chairman, died before sentencing. Jeff Skilling, the CEO, was imprisoned for 12 years, and CFO Andy Fastow served 5 years. Bernard Ebbers, the former CEO of WorldCom, received a 25-year sentence and passed away after serving 13 years. Executives from Rite Aid, Quest, and Cendant also went to prison during this period. Prosecution leniency. After the 2008 financial crisis, prosecutors were more lenient on financial crime. Mozzillo paid fines but avoided prosecution. No bank executives were criminally charged from 2009 to 2015. Karim Sarageldin, a Credit Suisse employee in London, received a 30-month sentence for fraud. European authorities prosecuted their citizens, while U.S. authorities targeted a Middle Eastern native working abroad, not on Wall Street. After 2008, the U.S. stopped prosecuting executives. The decision to stop prosecuting executives was largely influenced by decades of lobbying from the business community. In 1971, lawyer and former head of the American Bar Association, Lewis Powell, wrote a letter to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce titled "Attack on the American Free Enterprise System." Powell lamented that the American business executive is truly the forgotten man. The chamber later supported Skilling, a convicted Enron executive, in 2009. Over time, the chamber became a vocal opponent of stricter regulations on criminal executives. As the financial crisis started, the Justice Department appeared ready to increase prosecutions. They charged two hedge fund managers from Bear Stearns but suffered a setback when the defendants were acquitted. In 2013, then-Attorney General Eric Holder testified before Congress. He gave a candid assessment of a financial system dominated by large institutions. Responding to Senator Charles Grassley's questions about the lack of post-crash prosecutions, Holder said, "The size of some of these institutions becomes so large that it does become difficult for us to prosecute them." Holder explained that going after a major Wall Street firm could disrupt the U.S. economy and even world markets. Major banks were seen as too big to fail, and their executives as too big to jail. White-collar crime is hard to prosecute or measure. Violent crimes are usually straightforward, with clear identities of the perpetrators, victims, and the damage caused. In contrast, white-collar crimes are more complex. The bigger the economic crime, the more challenging it is for investigators and prosecutors to uncover the wrongdoing and press charges. Victims of elaborate schemes can seem responsible for their misfortune. For example, Mandy McGowan tragically overdosed on fentanyl while shopping at a Family Dollar store in 2016. A viral video showed her 2-year-old daughter trying to revive her mother. McGowan, featured in a video, faced blame from many, but her addiction to OxyContin stemmed from a doctor's prescription following neck surgery. She became another unnoticed victim of the Sackler family, owners of Purdue Pharma, and other drug companies that flooded the U.S. health system with highly addictive painkillers. Originally, Purdue Pharma created OxyContin for patients with advanced cancer and severe illnesses, where the risk of long-term addiction was low due to their limited life expectancy. However, Purdue Pharma saw a larger market among the 20% of Americans experiencing chronic pain. They claimed that their time-released opioid had minimal addiction risk and aggressively marketed it since 1996. The company poured money into promoting OxyContin as non-addictive, offering free pills for a week to a month with starter coupons. This marketing strategy led to high sales, with a single patient potentially generating $200,000 in revenue. Purdue Pharma faced justice after decades of wrongdoing. Purdue Pharma's claims were proven false over time. In 2007, three top executives pleaded guilty to misbranding OxyContin, paying $34.5 million in fines without serving prison time. Despite this, no Sackler family member faced criminal charges. Purdue adjusted its marketing to comply with the law, continuing to sell OxyContin in large quantities. By mid-2019, the Sackler family's net worth had risen to $13 billion. In 2019, the Sacklers agreed to pay $75 million of a $270 million settlement with Oklahoma. Purdue, facing Massachusetts charges, defended itself by claiming it followed industry standards. They argued that OxyContin only accounted for 2.5 billion of the 76 billion opioid pills sold from 2006 to 2012. Despite the backlash, including the Louvre, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and the Tate Modern distancing themselves, the Sacklers' wealth remained intact. Purdue Pharma settled new federal criminal charges in 2020, yet again without facing any criminal consequences. Wealthy white-collar criminals often avoid lengthy prison sentences. The 2019 Operation Varsity Blues exposed parents who cheated to get their kids into top universities. They lied about their children's sports achievements to boost their chances at schools like Princeton and Stanford. Despite their wealthy backgrounds, most got only a few months in jail. One of the worst offenders got 9 months. Another case of light punishment involved Deborah Kelly, a broker in New York. She paid bribes to win business with the New York State Common Retirement Fund. Despite being guilty of public corruption, she only got 6 months of home confinement. Less affluent defendants, particularly non-white individuals, often face harsher punishments. For example, in 2011, police in Connecticut arrested a homeless woman for enrolling her son in a school in a nearby town. She had to pay a $25,000 bond. Another example is Eric Garner, a black man who made money by selling single cigarettes on Staten Island streets. During a seemingly routine arrest, police restrained Garner in a chokehold. He passed out and died. His punishment for minor tax fraud was death. The U.S. must tackle dirty money with new policies. Addressing the epidemic of white-collar crime requires practical steps. Focus on high-stakes crime. The Department of Justice needs to crack down on repeat offenders by establishing a new division dedicated to aggressively prosecuting white-collar crime. Encourage police to tackle complex cases. Current laws often favor big businesses and wealthy offenders. We need tougher bribery laws and stronger regulations on shell corporations to close these loopholes. Establish a registry of white-collar offenders. Just like sex offenders, those guilty of economic crimes should be required to publicly register themselves, holding them accountable for their actions. Support investigative journalists and whistleblowers. Journalists and insiders play a crucial role in uncovering white-collar crimes. They need more government backing to help bring offenders to justice. Strengthen the IRS. The IRS is crucial in closing the $800 billion tax gap, but it's understaffed. We must provide the resources needed to help the IRS effectively enforce tax laws. Wealthy white-collar criminals often avoid lengthy prison sentences. The 2019 Operation Varsity Blues exposed parents who cheated to get their kids into top universities. They lied about their children's sports achievements to boost their chances at schools like Princeton and Stanford. Despite their wealthy backgrounds, most got only a few months in jail. One of the worst offenders got 9 months. Another case of light punishment involved Deborah Kelly, a broker in New York. She paid bribes to win business with the New York State Common Retirement Fund. Despite being guilty of public corruption, she only got 6 months of home confinement. Less affluent defendants, particularly non-white individuals, often face harsher punishments. For example, in 2011, police in Connecticut arrested a homeless woman for enrolling her son in a school in a nearby town. She had to pay a $25,000 bond. Another example is Eric Garner, a black man who made money by selling single cigarettes on Staten Island streets. During a seemingly routine arrest, police restrained Garner in a chokehold. He passed out and died. His punishment for minor tax fraud was death. The U.S. must tackle dirty money with new policies. Addressing the epidemic of white-collar crime requires practical steps. 1. Focus on high-stakes crime. The Department of Justice needs to crack down on repeat offenders by establishing a new division dedicated to aggressively prosecuting white-collar crime. 2. Encourage police to tackle complex cases. Current laws often favor big businesses and wealthy offenders. We need tougher bribery laws and stronger regulations on shell corporations to close these loopholes. 3. Establish a registry of white-collar offenders. Just like sex offenders, those guilty of economic crimes should be required to publicly register themselves, holding them accountable for their actions. 4. Support investigative journalists and whistleblowers. Journalists and insiders play a crucial role in uncovering white-collar crimes. They need more government backing to help bring offenders to justice. 5. Strengthen the IRS. The IRS is crucial in closing the $800 billion tax gap, but it's understaffed. We must provide the resources needed to help the IRS effectively enforce tax laws. Key points. 1. Corporate criminals profit while causing harm, like the Sackler family's promotion of the addictive OxyContin. 2. Prosecution leniency and lobbying lead to few consequences for white-collar offenders. 3. Wealthy criminals often avoid lengthy sentences, as seen in cases like Operation Varsity Blues. 4. Less affluent defendants, especially non-white individuals, face harsher punishments. 5. Steps to address white-collar crime include focusing on high-stakes offenses. 6. Supporting investigative journalism is crucial in uncovering economic crimes. 7. Strengthening regulatory bodies like the IRS is essential to enforce tax laws effectively.